From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, February 21st, 2025.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
President Donald Trump reiterated his threat today to yank Maine's federal education funding if the state doesn't comply with his executive order banning transgender athletes from participating in women's sports. As Steve Missler reports, the president and Democratic Governor Janet Mills had a tense exchange over the issue.
The exchange took place during Trump's speech at a National Governors Association event held at the White House when he called out Mills for not complying with his executive order. Mills told the president that the state will obey state and federal laws.
We are the federal law. Well, you better do it. You better do it because you're not going to get any federal funding at all if you don't.
Mills then told Trump that the state won't be intimidated and that it will see the president in court if he attempts to withhold education funding. The state received $250 million in federal education funding during the most recent fiscal year. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
The Trump administration announced Friday afternoon that it's investigating the Maine Department of Education and the Cumberland North Yarmouth School District for allowing female transgender athletes to compete. Maine Republican Representative Laurel Libby had posted photos of a trans female athlete from the school district on social media this week that garnered national attention. Bree Danvers Kidman is co-executive director of Maine Transgender Network.
I think the conversation that we're having today is less about transgender female athletes and more about adult bullying children.
Danvers Kidman says they're heartened that Governor Mills and Attorney General Aaron Fry are taking a firm position. Fry said early Friday that any attempt to cut off federal education funding to the state would be in direct violation of federal court orders. A proposed rule that would require solar companies to pay a state fee in order to place panels on agricultural land took a step forward yesterday. Molly Anking reports.
State agriculture officials and the Board of Environmental Protection say the proposed fee is aimed at balancing competing land uses. If implemented, solar companies would have to pay a compensation fee to the DEP in order to develop on what is assessed as high-value agricultural farmland. The Department of Agriculture estimates that roughly 13% of Maine land would have this designation. The fee amounts are still being worked out. The rule has been subject to debate. Solar companies say it would make development more difficult and more expensive at a time when the state needs to prioritize clean energy projects. Opponents, including some farmers, say the shrinking amount of viable farmland in Maine makes this rule necessary. But other farmers say hosting solar projects on their land is an important way to supplement their income. And there's concern from farmer advocacy groups that the fees would penalize the farmers renting the land rather than the solar companies. The Board of Environmental Protection voted Thursday to advance the rule to public comment period and to schedule a public hearing. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Molly Enking.
Some Mainers may be waiting longer for heating fuel deliveries this winter. Charlie Summers is president of the Maine Energy Marketers Association, which represents fuel retailers around the state. He says demand for heating fuel is up this winter, as it's been colder compared to the past few years.
The fuel retailers that I represent, they will base the total amount of fuel that they purchase for their customers on previous winters. And for the last three, four, five winters in Maine, they've been fairly mild.
Summers says delays are more common for those who don't have a contract with their fuel company and order refills as needed. Most fuel companies first service those who have set up automatic deliveries. He says anyone who's running low should not wait to call their fuel company and that some fuel delivery drivers are working a few extra hours a day to meet the demand. Two Eastern European men have been charged with federal crimes in connection with the swatting attempts on Maine Secretary of State Shenna Bellows. Bellows and her family received threats of violence in December of 2023 after she tried to take Donald Trump off of Maine's ballot. She says her personal information had been shared on the dark web, known as doxing. On Maine Calling Thursday, Bellows said she is relieved the case is solved.
State and federal law enforcement working together apprehended the perpetrators of that swatting. And it turned out that they were allegedly foreign nationals. And I'm really impressed and just pleased that the Department of Justice and the authorities worked so hard to bring the perpetrators to justice and now are moving forward to hold them accountable.
The Department of Justice says Bellow's case was part of a broader attack on about 100 U.S. officials. The U.S. Department of Education is warning states that they will lose federal funding if they don't eliminate programming related to diversity, equity, and inclusion in the next 14 days. Maddie Smith has more.
The letter says DEI programs, quote, totally indoctrinated students with the false premise that the United States is built upon systemic and structural racism. Maine K-12 schools received $250 million in federal funding this school year to support multilingual learners, rural students, and special education programs. It remains unclear which, if any, of these programs are considered under the DEI umbrella. The University of Maine system houses several DEI offices, including the president's DEI council at the University of Maine at Augusta. Governor Janet Mills released a statement today saying her administration will, quote, take all appropriate and necessary legal action to restore that funding and the academic opportunity it provides. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Maddie Smith.
And now it's time for Maine Public's Political Pulse, our regular look at government and politics. I'm joined by Maine Public's chief political correspondent, Steve Missler, and Statehouse correspondent, Kevin Miller. Steve and Kevin, there is so much news coming out of Washington, D.C. right now as the Trump administration keeps up this frenetic pace of layoffs, funding cuts, and other changes. Many of those will obviously impact Maine, which I'd like to talk about a bit later. But first, I want to ask about this lawsuit over Maine's new 3-day waiting period on gun purchases. In your Political Pulse newsletter this week, you suggest that this case could have national ramifications. Kevin, can you explain why?
Yeah, thanks, Ari. So last week, the top federal judge in Maine's district court, Lance Walker, he suspended the state's 3-day waiting period on gun buyers. This was just a preliminary ruling, but the judge agreed with several gun dealers and a self-defense instructor that the law indiscriminately forces everybody to wait these 3 days or 72 hours to pick up their new firearms. And that's even if they've passed a background check and they're not showing any signs of mental distress or anger. And the reason we say this could have national implications is because this is the first time a federal district court judge has come down on the side of Second Amendment defenders in a lawsuit over waiting periods, at least since this legal landscape has changed around guns a few years ago. David Trahan, who's with the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine, was almost giddy after this ruling the other day.
We have the funding to go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And if that happens, this will get settled for over 20 states. And if it gets, I guess, reinforced at the Supreme Court level, all of those laws will then be null and void.
So I understand that Maine is one of more than a dozen states that have these waiting period laws, and some of those laws have been upheld by the courts in the past. So what changed here?
Right. So as I mentioned, the legal landscape around gun regulations changed 3 years ago, and that's when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in a case known as Bruin. Bruin dealt with New York State's very restrictive concealed carry laws. But when the conservatives on the court struck down parts of that New York law, they also created this whole new legal standard by essentially saying that any new gun regulations should have some historical precedent or analog. Now, as you said, waiting periods have been upheld as constitutional many times before in the past because they're viewed as public safety measures, especially when it deals with potentially preventing suicides, because they impose a cooling off period before you can go home with a gun. But most of those cases happened before Bruin. But I spoke with Billy Clark, who's with Giffords Law Center, which is one of the big legal groups that defends gun control. And he pointed out that other federal judges have upheld waiting period laws in Vermont and Colorado and in New Mexico. And all of those happened since the Bruin case.
You know, we are confident that this law will be upheld, that, you know, this is an outlier decision and that nothing in the Bruin decision commands this result.
Now, Maine's Attorney General Aaron Fry has appealed the judge's ruling, so it's now headed to the federal appellate court in Boston.
Turning now to the Trump administration's controversial actions, Steve, many Republicans in Congress have strongly supported the president's agenda of cutting government spending and slashing federal jobs. That is, until it hits close to home for them.
Yes, the cuts for thee, but not for me. That seems to be the theme from the GOP-controlled Congress as Elon Musk rampages through the federal bureaucracy and the Trump administration freezes funds and slashes federal jobs. But what's interesting here is that Republicans could assert their power of the purse and control of Congress to slow this down, but doing that would provoke a confrontation with Trump, and they're just unwilling to do that. So instead, it looks like they've resorted to begging the Trump administration to stay the axe in their respective states. So that's been true in Maine, as Republican Senator Susan Collins, who's the chair of the Senate Budget Writing Committee, writes letters to preserve jobs at the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard or unfreeze research grants from the National Institute of Health. And it's been true of Republican members of Congress all over the country, whether it's NIH grants in Alabama or crops in Kansas that were supposed to go to impoverished countries but are now rotting somewhere because Musk put the USAID agency in the so-called wood chipper. And Ari, Trump has demonstrated that he's a transactional president, so one has to wonder what these politicians might be asked to deliver if they can actually convince him to reopen the funding spigot in their state.
Sticking with reaction to Trump's agenda, a poll came out this week suggesting that Mainers are more than just divided on the president's job performance. What's going on there?
Yeah, I think it's pretty astonishing. 98% of Republicans think Trump is doing a good job, and 98% of Democrats don't think he's doing a good job. In my couple of decades now, reading polls and paying attention to politics, I can't think of another time when you have 98% of a group of voters feeling one way.
Yeah, just a couple of things struck me about this survey, Ari. Independents, who determine a lot of elections in this state, are mostly unimpressed with the president's executive actions. And the same goes for Musk to an even starker degree. I think there's a general discomfort with a billionaire rummaging through the people's private information. And, you know, Republicans don't seem to have a problem with it, but a lot of other people do.
And finally, Republican State Representative Laurel Libby plowed headlong into the debate over transgender women participating in girls and women's sports. Steve, what's the latest there?
Yeah, so the issue of transgender women participating in women's sports has been a crusade for conservatives for a few years now. And President Trump has also made it an issue by threatening to withhold federal funds from states that don't outlaw it. It's an issue that reasonable people can disagree on, but what Representative Libby did this week took it to another place. She posted a photo from a high school track meet and identified a teenager as a trans athlete. The photo blurred the faces of the girls on the podium, but not the athlete Libby wanted to draw attention to. And that's drawn a lot of blowback from people who don't think it's appropriate to insert kids into political debates and the online harassment that typically comes with it. And as it turns out, this photo is all over the place now in the conservative media ecosystem. But for what it's worth, Libby is unapologetic and has basically declined to take down the photo and really is just taking aim at the Maine Principals Association for allowing this athlete to even participate in the event last week.
And that was Maine's chief political correspondent Steve Missler and State House correspondent Kevin Miller. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow morning at 8 for Weekend Edition with Carol Bousquet. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.